Greetings, greetings once again to all my enemies and all my friends. Well, you may have heard the news, but stand by now for the worldview. Again, it is the Weekly Worldview. Welcome back to the show where we don't take calls. We don't tolerate sponsors. But we will help you focus on the events of the week and all of that. Not as giddy as we were last week, that's all. That's because I've been traveling. Takes a lot out of you. The bloom is off the rose for the whole travel situation for me. Don't like it. I don't like leaving home. But anyway, it just wasn't really cold enough in Colorado in December, so I decided to go to New Hampshire, where it was a good time was had by all. But I'm getting a bit old for the road trips, that's all. The four-hour flight, that's difficult. That's difficult. But we're back, and so I'll try to pump it up so that we can feel like we're excited about another Weekly Worldview. Pretty excited over here. So we've got, well, what's going on in the world? Huawei CFO is in jail in Canada. Huawei, you familiar? One of the largest manufacturers of Chinese spy phones. They're the ones who make the Chinese cell phones that U.S. military personnel are not allowed to buy because they got the spy chip in there. The company's called Huawei. And their CFO is in jail amidst allegations that she facilitated the violation of sanctions against Iran. Yeah, so they were selling spy chip phones to Iran out the back door, something like that. And so she's in jail as we speak, which is interesting. Interesting. That's all I know. The only reason I bring it up is because for weeks, I haven't been able to figure out how to pronounce the name of the company because it's pronounced or it's spelled Huawei. So there's like 14 different ways you can try to pronounce that are incorrect. It's Huawei, like you would say when you were five and you were going down a slide and you'd say, Huawei! It's like that. Except it's an evil Chinese spy phone company. So it's not really associated with innocent fun at five, sliding down a slide. It's actually violating sanctions and all that. I just find it interesting that the Canadians and the Americans actually had the nerve to arrest this person. Definitely promising. Let's just put it that way. All right, what else is happening? Asia Bibi still hiding out in Pakistan as far as we know. Her house has not been burned down. Her family has not yet been murdered by the Pakistani Islamists, but she still languishes somewhere in Pakistan. And I'm pretty sure anywhere in Pakistan you're languishing. I don't think there's any other alternative in Pakistan except to languish. And she is there. What else? France is burning. France is burning because of, well, there's a host of reasons. I mean, it might have started over the gasoline tax in order to stay the threat of global climate change. That may have been the start. But anyway, it's gone well beyond anything like that. But anyway, I don't really have much to say about it because, we've got to talk about the Oscars, obviously. Right? The Oscars. Everybody's on the edge of their seat. The Academy Awards are coming up, he said to his extremely attractive audio engineer, who was distracted and not paying attention. I thought when I mentioned the Oscars, your ears would perk up and you would. Mm-hmm. Well, did you hear about what happened with they named a host of the Oscars, a fellow named Kevin Hart. Mm-hmm. We have all his records, right? Sunglasses at night.
What?
I know. I wouldn't have thought he.
Who's Kevin Hart?
Oh, it's Kevin Hart, not Corey Hart. Kevin Hart. I have no idea who this guy is. He's some sort of comedian.
Okay.
Anyway, he was named the host of the Oscars and immediately glad the Gay and Lesbian Advocacy Action Network Deviants. I forget what GLAAD stands for. But you know them as the world's premier advocates for LGBTQ situations. Yeah. GLAAD reached out to the Oscars, ABC, the Academy, and comedian Kevin Hart's managers to bring up Kevin's anti-LGBTQ rhetoric and record from years gone by. So it turns out Kevin Hart, in his stand-up act back in 2010, said the following, quote, he said, "One of my biggest fears is my son growing up and being gay." That was part of his stand-up routine back when you could make fun of homosexuals and people would actually laugh. Right. You know, now they throw knives at you on the stage, or they set you on fire, I think. Anyway, in 2011, he posted a tweet. Always a mistake. If you've posted any tweets, they're bound to come back and bite you. Well, that's why we do this show in an audio format. It's harder for the deviants to search for my anti-LGBTQ rhetoric. he posted a tweet. "Yo, if my son comes home and tries to play with my daughter's dollhouse," and he's using numbers, and "tries to play," I think that means he's black. And he opens it up with "yo." "Yo, if my son comes home and he tries to play with my daughter's dollhouse, I'm going to say stop. That's gay." Well, I'm assuming he's black. I don't, just because he opened with "yo" and then he used the number 2 instead of T-O. So anyway, man, you know what? I've probably just exposed myself as a racist for assuming that because a guy opens a tweet with "yo, yo, yo," that he's black. I mean, he could be a skinny, pale, white kid from the south side of Boston. It's definitely possible. So I apologize to everyone who I've ever offended for anything. Oh, and that reminds me, speaking of apologies, Kevin Hart was called on to apologize so he could keep his gig as the host of the Academy Awards. And he said, "You know, I'll pass on the apology." And then they fired him. And so once he had been fired, I think he just wanted to get out of the gig. Because it's a pretty lousy gig hosting the Academy Awards. I don't think it pays much. There's no upside, especially in the modern, the milieu of sexual tension and abuse and just tension in general. I don't think there's a real upside to hosting. But after Kevin Hart was fired, he realized that he would have to continue his career in Hollywood. And so he immediately, well, he wrote on Twitter, "I sincerely apologize to the LGBTQ community for my insensitive words from my past." He then posted a quote from Martin Luther King Jr. That didn't really go over very good with the queers, though. Martin Luther King Jr. does not hold sway with the homosexualists like he does with our African American brethren. No, they didn't. They weren't impressed with that. And so I think he had to post another. Did he post another? Anyway. That's it. Oh, and then he wrote on Instagram. He said, "I'm almost 40 years old," says comedian Kevin Hart after being fired from hosting the Academy Awards. He says, "I'm almost 40 years old. If you don't believe that people change and grow and evolve, I don't know what to tell you." And then he added in all caps, "I love everybody. Everybody." And his career's over. He doesn't realize it. Because once you offend the queers, you're not allowed to apologize. No, 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 no. They must take their pound of flesh. Or in his case, it's 185 pounds of flesh. Take it all. His career's over. It was nice, Mr. Hart. I'm sorry I never saw your act. Sound like you might have been a funny guy. We might have gotten along. Well, again, maybe not. I don't know. All right. So there we have... So we have the Oscars news. Now it's hard. There's a big come down from that because all other news pales in comparison to news about the Academy Awards. So the only outfit that could compete against the Academy Awards for just sheer cringeworthiness of news would be the United Nations, where we have a new report from the Unclimate Chief. The Unclimate Chief, Patricia Espinosa, has released a report. Yes. And guess what? She says it doesn't look good for the whole global climate change situation. Surprisingly, the Unclimate Chief says climate change impacts have never been worse. Failure to act will be catastrophic. The impacts are increasingly hard to ignore. The new report is so dire that the Unclimate Chief was joined in signing a letter of warning by other former Unclimate Chiefs and summit and presidents and secretaries. And they all agreed, quote, "We require deep transformations of our economies and societies. The impacts of climate change." Okay. So you've got all that. Would you think that an Unclimate panel would release a report that said, "Hey, turns out everything's going to be fine. We'd like to get our resumes up on Indeed.com. Well, that's never going to happen. So instead, we've got the report from Patricia that all is lost. The sky is falling. And the CO2 is just scary. It's terrible. Yeah, so they want to transform our economies and societies. Mostly they want the United Nations and the contributing nations to transform certain quantities of money into their bank accounts in order to do research. And if we were able to transform enough of that, they would be all over solving the whole climate change issue. They're ready to go there. They just need to be fully funded is what they're looking for. The G20 met, you may or may not have heard. The G20 met, and they said that despite the fact that the United States has pulled out of the Paris Accord to throttle climate change before it destroys us all, they released a communique, a final communique, they called it. This is the final communique from the G20. It declared that the Paris Agreement is irreversible. It's irreversible, and it doesn't matter that the United States isn't going to be involved. And it doesn't matter that China and India were never going to be involved. It's irreversible. And then the French set the cars on fire and Macron backed off on the gas tax. So that's not irreversible. That's not irreversible. But the climate Paris Agreement has been declared eternal and irreversible by the G20 leaders, except for the United States, and China, and India, who were never going to. Let's see here. We've been warned now by Patricia Espinosa, the Unclimate Chief, that even solid progress on the Paris goals may not be enough to prevent runaway global warming. Runaway global warming. Not just that slow drip, drip of nagging climate change. No, but runaway global warming. And she says that there's been a series of major climate change reports that we all should have been paying attention to. And it's all fairly obvious to her. And then we finally, on the climate change front, we have a statement from Amjad Abdullah, chief negotiator for the Alliance of Small Island States of the UNTALKS. Small island states. Amjad Abdullah says, quote, "A failure to act now risks pushing us beyond a point of no return with catastrophic consequences for life as we know it." This is my routing number. This is my account number. I am here to help. Those are the kind of guitars you got to jump up and stomp down to get them to stop. You got to be stomping down on those to get those to stop. All right, now I want to thank Unclimate Chief Patricia Espinosa as well as Amjad Abdullah for their contribution to the science really file, which is where that story is from. Was that working? Science! That doesn't sound like the same level of reverb we had before we scraped the barnacles off. I'm not liking this. All right, well, we'll work on that. So let's come back here. We'll work on the reverberations because we like those. But so we talked a little bit about climate change, and we talked a little bit about taxes and burning cars and things like that. Out here in Colorado, while we here at the McBurney compound are not preparing to turn over any police cars, nor are we going to set them on fire, there has been a change to the taxing structure that we find disconcerting, uncomfortable, and frankly distasteful. Not that we don't appreciate being tax collectors. First of all, we would like to express our sincere gratitude to the state of Colorado for allowing us to fulfill one of our childhood dreams, which was to grow up and be a tax collector, which I remember since third grade when I first heard about the idea of sales tax. I've always dreamed that I could do that, and now we get to do that here in the state of Colorado because we sell a few minor wares, and Colorado has changed the way they the way we are required to report the collection of sales tax. And I'll just leave it at that because that sounds simple. And I'll tell you what, it's not, okay? It's not simple in any way. But I don't want to drive you insane or make your forehead throb. So I'm just going to stop with the details. And so basically what we did was we purchased a software program that was intended to do the calculations for us. So and when I found this software, I thought, well, this is it. Private industry will find a way through technology to compensate for the stupidity of the government and for the overbearing, cumbersome impedances to progress that the government throws into the path of small, struggling business people like us. So I thought the software would be the problem. It turns out the software... Well, let me just go to my my note to the support staff there at TaxJar. That's the software. So we hooked up the software. We did the plug-in, and we entered a test sale. And the software that was intended to automatically calculate the tax rate for us miscalculated. It miscalculated, and it was easy to see because, well, it was simple math. It took us approximately 40 milliseconds to analyze the issue and realize that this software is not calculating the proper tax rate. So I sent a note up to the support desk. Hey, the tax rates are not calculating properly. I put a link to the store so they could go test it themselves. I said, here, go test it. Please give me a call or write and let me know how we can correct the problem. There was a phone number, but that did no good. I was not able to talk to a human being, which I understand that, okay? I understand. I'm not going to get angry over this. So 48 hours later, I get a note from the support staff. Hey, Doug. Thanks for reaching out. We're happy to help. And I'm already feeling, wow, they're glad I reached out. And they're happy. Isn't that wonderful? We're happy to help you with this, Doug. But can you give us more specifics on what you feel is wrong? I want to make sure we get the issue resolved for you. Cheers, Matt. At the support desk. Cheers, Matt. So I wrote back to Matt, Dearest Matthew, I feel that the Tax Jar software is not properly calculating sales tax on our website. You will get the same feeling if you test it here, and I put a link, just in case he wanted to experience my feelings. These feelings of mine, have been confirmed via mathematics. If I'm not mistaken, Matt, the reason we purchased the software was to calculate sales tax rates accurately. Hence my feeling that there is something wrong. Please call me on Monday morning as scheduled. Dearest Matthew, thank you very much. So there. But you know what? I didn't get angry about this. In fact, I found it somewhat amusing, even though I had waited 48 hours. And here at the McBurney compound, we're holding our breath, hoping nobody orders anything off our website because the tax function is all messed up. Well, if you're from out of state, please go ahead and order. But if you're not and you live in Colorado, just hold your horses. We're trying to comply is what we're trying to do. And I look forward to a delightful conversation with Matt Monday morning at 8 o'clock as we are scheduled to discuss the finer points of, relatively simple mathematics.
Matt could be a girl, though.
Matt could be a girl, actually. Mm-hmm. Well, Matt could identify a girl just during our phone call. So I'll make a note. Don't use gender-specific pronouns until you confirm with Matt. Okay, there we go. We don't want to offend anyone. So thank you very much. All right, now, speaking of gender-confused identifying and all of that, we'll go to Tim Cook from the Hate Machine file. This is a new file. This is going to be the file wherein resides all the stories about all the hate against all the normal people being perpetuated and belched out and spewed upon the normal people by the beautiful people like Tim Cook. By the way, a little note on Tim Cook. Something that I've noticed. So before Tim Cook came out as a homosexual, he did not lisp like a queer. He didn't lisp like someone who'd had like 3 gins at a gay bar. He didn't sound like that.
Who's Tim Cook?
Tim Cook is the CEO of Apple. He replaced the guy who died, Steve Jobs, who was a heterosexual. So anyway, I just make a note, go back in history and just listen to Tim Cook speak before he came out and after. And like the lisp evolved. Anyway, he's got this thing going now. And it's anyway, Tim Cook finds himself at an Anti-Defamation League event last Monday. And I thought the Anti-Defamation League was against anti-Semitism, is what I thought. And I think it was, until it was taken over by homosexuals. and they were honoring Tim Cook with the ADL's first Courage Against Hate Award for showing courage in the face of hate. Tim Cook is our first winner. Tim took to the stage and, well, he basically went on an anti-Christian rant is what he did. It was veiled, but it was an anti-Christian rant. He said, quote, this is Tim Cook after he came out. We have only one message for those who seek to push hate, division, and violence. You have no place on our platforms. You have no home here, said Tim. I'm sorry, unquote. You notice the lisp? It's just gotten more thick and syrupy and just, yuck. What's going on with that lisp there, Tim? Anyway, he went on and on about sinning. He talked about sinning. He talked about how Apple shouldn't be afraid of their values. He's against hate. He's against that. Anyway, all this stuff that the ADL, I'm sure they just lap it up there at the, you know, along with the rubbery lobster that they had and the salmon that they had at their award festival. But Tim Cook's attitude about hate is dangerous. Why? It's because he's a hateful, evil person. And when the evil are the arbiters of what is and what isn't hate, well, then good and decent and normal people are in danger. And I feel a little bit more in danger this week than I did last week, because one of the most powerful people in the world is basically accusing me of pushing hate, division, and violence because I say that homosexuals are living a lifestyle that's going to lead to their ultimate death and destruction, separation from God, and that they should repent because it's a sinful, perverted lifestyle. And so that translated, hate and division and violence. Anyway, Tim says, I have no place on, what is he say? I have no home on his platforms. So I wonder, I'm still on iTunes, but they're going to notice me one of these days. One of these days, they're going to notice and kick me off of iTunes. Well, that'll be a tragedy. All right. So anyway, I really only did that story to point out that Tim Cook didn't used to lisp, and now he does. What's up with that? Okay, that's all. You could explain that to me, Tim. I'll be happy to elaborate on all the hate and fear and division and all of that that you suspect me of. We could sit down and talk. All right. Al Sharpton, look at this. Just when you think you've got somebody figured out, Al Sharpton goes and donates the rights to his life story to charity. Can you believe that? I've always thought he was a money-grubbing shakedown artist and a race hustler, a con man, a thief, and a liar, is what I thought about Al Sharpton. And then you find out, I've got the story here from the New York Post. Al Sharpton, well, he didn't exactly donate this, did he? Huh. Al Sharpton sold the rights to his life story to a charity for about $500,000. Now, how often do you sell things to a charity for $500,000? I mean, don't rich people like Al Sharpton, don't they usually give money to charities? Oh, wait a second. It's his own charity. He sold his life story, the rights to his life story, to his National Action Network. And that's not just a charity, that's his own charity. So oddly enough, Al Sharpton, his own charity is going to write him a check for $500,000, which that's not usually the way charity works. And then they'll have access to the rights to his life story for a period of 10 years. Well, that's a really good deal for the National Action Network, isn't it? Al says that National Action Network, they can feel free to sell the rights to Hollywood producer. They can make a movie about the story of my life. I'm going to license out that bullhorn that I had out in Brooklyn. Y'all remember? Let's see here now. National Action Network already compensates Mr. Sharpton with a salary of approximately $250,000 a year. Mm-hmm. And when asked by inquiring reporters when the National Action Network would actually write him a check for the rights, Mr. Sharpton responded, quote, "What does that have to do with anything? Get off of me. Back off. You a racist. You trying to keep a brother down is what it is." Sharpton insists that the idea for the deal came from two National Action Network board members that were not influenced by him in any way, and reminded all of us that when it comes to the rights to his life story, what we got here is real property. Real property. These are saleable items. I'm a big star. They could make a movie, maybe a Broadway play. National Action Network could easily make 300% return on investment. And besides, I just want to remind y'all, selling your life story to your own charity ain't nearly as bad as inciting a massacre like what happened at Freddy's Fashion Mart. Y'all remember that? 1995, 7 people killed. Don't be getting on me about selling my life story, all right? Oh, I want to remind you one other thing. Selling the rights of your life story to your own charity, it ain't nearly as bad as accusing an innocent man of rape. Like what happened with that Tawana Brawley situation. Y'all remember that back in 1988? Now get up off of me. Doug McBurney, thank you very much. Thank you. Very much. That was great. That was fantastic. I'm feeling giddy. It's as if the jet lag has just run up off of me there, and I'm feeling good now. And so for those of you in the audience who think that I'm some kind of racist for doing Al Sharpton, well, I did some Scottish guy within the last couple of 3 weeks. Anyway, so I'm an equal opportunity impersonator, although I do some people better than others. My Al Sharpton is infinitely better than my Donald Trump. So, which is, yeah, and I still barely can do Barack Obama. And he's like yesterday's news. All right, speaking of yesterday's news, Dominique Sharpton, daughter of Al Sharpton, has received a $95,000 settlement from the city of Brooklyn. She sued the city of Brooklyn back in April of 2015 for $5 million. $5 million. So what happened? Was she run over by a garbage truck? Was she permanently disfigured by a city worker? Was she beaten on by some white police? I mean, $5 million. That's a significant lawsuit. Well, it turns out she severely injured her right leg when she twisted her ankle on crack pavement crossing the street. And that happened in 2014. And then by 2015, she realized she better file a suit. So she filed the suit for $5 million. And then after that, she missed four scheduled depositions over a six-month period in 2016. And the judge was about ready to throw the case out because she wouldn't show up. But inexplicably, instead of throwing the case out, the judge settled with her for $95,000. I don't know why. It's possible that someone threatened to burn the judge's house down. I mean, it's just possible. Not that Al Sharpton would ever light a fire himself. No, sir. Certainly not. And I don't want to imply that anything like that could have ever happened. So let's see here. She severely injured. Oh, she claimed in a lawsuit she was in permanent physical pain. Well, who's not in permanent physical pain? If you're over the age of 30, you're probably in permanent physical pain. Sit down and shut up. Put your ankle up on a bench or something. Quit whining. By the way, after the tragic incident that left her in permanently disfigured pain and agony and mental suffering, she was able to wear high heels, she was able to climb a ladder to decorate a Christmas tree, and she even hiked for 2 hours up a mountain during a girl's getaway in Indonesia back in May of 2016, all of which she posted to social media, but none of it mattered because they settled with her for $95,000. And this, by the way, this is after she admitted that she changed into party clothes and attended a two-hour concert for her father's 60th birthday, hours after the tragic incident that left her permanently disfigured and in misery. So there you go. Al Sharpton, the apple doesn't shake down far from the tree, so to speak. All right, $5 million. Okay. All right, so there we have. Now let's go from Al Sharpton to Jeffrey Epstein. We talked a bit about Mr. Epstein in the last few weeks. Now, it turns out, Jeffrey Epstein was being sued by a lawyer who represented a number of Epstein's victims. During the filings and pronouncements of this lawsuit, this lawyer, Jack Scarola, would go on long bloviating episodes where he declared how terrible it was that these victims were not allowed to tell their story and that justice must prevail. Now, he had sued Epstein because he said that Epstein was damaging his reputation by suing him. So Epstein had sued him. So he turned around and sued Epstein. And some of Epstein's victims were expected to testify at his civil trial. Although the news station here, I downloaded this story from WPTV. WPTV, Palm Beach County Television. And they say some of Epstein's alleged victims were expected to testify. Now, wasn't Epstein convicted? Didn't he plead guilty to prostitution? Do we still have to say alleged? Apparently we do when it comes to Mr. Epstein. Otherwise, he'll sue you. So this lawyer, Jack Scarola. Oh, no, I'm sorry. The lawyer is Bradley Edwards. Jack Scarola is Bradley Edwards' lawyer. The lawyer got a lawyer so that he could sue Epstein and his lawyers. Now this story's gone on too far. I think I've lost just about everybody. Hey, the bottom line is, Bradley Edwards insisted he had to sue Jeffrey Epstein to do the right thing by the victims, and there's a tragedy miscarriage. Everybody needs to be able to tell their story. Everybody should be believed. And then Epstein offered him a settlement, and instead of honoring his commitment to justice and the victims, Bradley Edwards just took the money. Instead of forcing the public testimony against Mr. Epstein. This lawyer, Bradley Edwards, took the money instead, and he just settled. In a private settlement, the details are confidential, but I can assure you there's a significant amount of money involved. You'll remember, by the way, Epstein was accused of luring underage girls and abusing them. He pled guilty in 08 to state prostitution charges and served 13 months in jail, although he was allowed to leave during the week to go to work. His plea deal was put together by now Labor Secretary Alexander Acosta, big friend of Donald Trump, who was a big friend of Jeffrey Epstein. Democratic Congresswoman Lois Frankel, by the way, and 11 of her Democrat colleagues have sent a letter to the Inspector General asking for an investigation into whether any Department of Justice policies, procedures, or practices were violated by Secretary Acosta when he covered up the abuse of maybe 1,000 young girls and basically shielded everyone who maybe might have abused those girls from any type of prosecution ever. Is it possible that violated Department of Justice policies? Well, I mean, in the first three words, Department of Justice, okay, well, it violated justice. I don't even think we need to get into specific policies, but I'm happy to see that some Democrats are interested in investigating. So this Democratic Congresswoman, Lois Frankel, she must not have had any friends on that plane or on that island, or at least they haven't made contact with her yet and said, excuse us, Lois. We like to make big donations to your congressional campaign. So could you lay off the Epstein thing? So we'll know when that call goes through, because that's when she'll drop, her and her 11 colleagues will drop their demands for an investigation, and they'll all be offered chairmanships on various committees, and their shiftless relatives will all get low-level jobs in the federal bureaucracy. And Jeffrey Epstein will continue to, just live as a free man, which is unbelievable. So that's that. Now we're going to get into the justice file and the domestic tranquil. Well, this is awful. Listen to this. A good Samaritan in Baltimore. It doesn't pay to be a good Samaritan in Baltimore. Or if you are a good Samaritan, you better be right with God, because anything could happen. Jacqueline Smith lived in Aberdeen, Maryland, and she went into the city of Baltimore briefly to drop some family members off. Now police are searching for her killer. People on the street claim that she rolled down her window to hand money to a vagrant holding a sign when an unknown man approached the vehicle and stabbed her to death and then left. Now that's a fishy-sounding story, I must say. It sounds very suspicious. It's very rare for people to be murdered by someone they don't know, let alone like a random vagrant stabbing you to death.
Is this actress?
Is she an actress? No, she's just a lady, Jacqueline Smith. Well, there was an actress, Jacqueline. I'm sure this is not her. This is just some poor lady from Maryland who got butchered in the streets of Baltimore. We'll find out why. But I mean, either way, the story is shocking and horrible. Can you imagine? You roll your windows down to give money to a bum, and another bum stabs you to death? Well, that's a shocking story. But it sounds kind of fishy to me. Mm-hmm. But if she was set up by some friend, relative, or perhaps spurned lover, ex-husband, boyfriend, whatever, well, that's a horrible and shocking story, too, that could happen right there on the streets of Baltimore in broad daylight. Oh, wait a minute. It wasn't broad daylight. It was midnight. Well, all right. Baltimore Mayor Catherine Pugh weighed in on the situations. The mayor of Baltimore said, quote, "We don't want people destroying other people's lives. This is unconscionable. And as I've continued to say, one life lost in this city is one life too many," as the blood swelled up in the street to approximately waist deep. That's a slight exaggeration, but only strike. Oh, the mayor added that this is a reminder not to roll down your windows for panhandlers. Is that... So I was riding through, I believe it was Philadelphia, with some friends of mine, and they were going to give money to a panhandler on the side of the freeway off-ramp there. I said, what are you doing? Hey, I just want to give brother a little help. I said, well, hold on a second. If you have so insulted and alienated, robbed, and otherwise molested everyone in your life to the point where you are living on a freeway off-ramp, and you have to hold a sign to get money because everyone you ever knew growing up, everyone in your family, you've ripped them off, you've lied to them, you have alienated everyone in your life. You're such a horrible person that you have to ask complete strangers for money. I said, do you really want to help somebody like that? Have you ever thought about that? He said, you know, I've never thought about that. And he put his wallet back in his pocket. I made eye contact with the vagrant, and we drove away.
You're unbelievable. You're so unbelievable. You're unbelievable.
Worldview is what it is. Is what it is. And we're back into, and we dive now into the Just a System file. We go to Raleigh, North Carolina, where a young man who has pled guilty to killing his mother during an argument has been sentenced to 12 years in prison. 19-year-old young man confesses to killing his mother. The prosecutor says that the mother may have pushed him or slapped him, and then he choked her to death is what happened. His attorney said that the mother was hard on him. She was hard on him and may have slapped him and or pushed him. They claim he suffered verbal and physical abuse, and that this verbal and physical abuse had been going on for some time before the young man choked his mother to death. The mother was not able to rebut the accusations against her, and he did confess to killing her after they showed him all the DNA evidence that he couldn't deny. And the judge says that his age and immaturity and his confession early on in the investigation led to the plea deal. So he saved the DA and the judge some paperwork and, you know, a few long nights, maybe a weekend away from the golf course. And so in return, he gets a 12-year sentence, which means he'll be out in 5 years. He'll be out of jail in 5 years. He strangled his own mother to death. That's the Just a System file. Now we go to, let's see. Boy. So David Bohart. Yeah, David Bohart was released from prison on Monday, November 19th, after serving 3 years for possession or use of dangerous drugs. He had been in prison for 3 years. So he was released on Monday. On Wednesday, police discovered 49-year-old Marika Jones's body. She had been stabbed to death. And with her was a file full of Mr. Bohart's legal records. And records indicate an unknown man had called 911 to say he had just killed his girlfriend. It turns out it was Bohart. So by Friday, he was arrested. He's back in jail. This is Bohart's third time being processed through the justice system. Previously, he served time for forgery and drug possession. And now, say the reporters from the Associated Press, he may get he may be headed for a fourth and far more serious sentence. But then again, he may not. Because it's just a system, is what it is. Now, we have the Philadelphia Tribune reporting that moments after Thomas Lee Williams was released from jail on Tuesday, he attacked a woman in the parking lot and took her vehicle and fled with her one-year-old grandson in the back seat. The criminal, Thomas Lee Williams, crashed about 2 miles away and was later apprehended, and he was back behind bars on Wednesday. So he was released on Tuesday, carjacked a woman, was back in jail by Wednesday on a $250,000 bail. He encountered the 65-year-old woman, opened the door of her Kia Sorento, and began beating her in the face, back, and shoulders with his fists until he was able to commandeer the vehicle and take it from her. He's been charged with kidnapping, assault, reckless endangerment. So that is just these are just examples of the catch and release system. Which is a subsystem in the just system. Meanwhile, on the domestic tranquility front, we go to Kansas City, where an armed attacker pursued a pair of shooting victims through the city and right to the entrance of the University of Kansas Medical Center. Police were first called about a shooting in the city, and there was a chase from 7th Street and Osage Avenue, right through Kansas City, right to the front door of the hospital, where the male victim who had been shot tried to get into the hospital, but the hospital's doors were locked. Why? Because of things like this. So he wasn't able to get into the hospital, so the attacker caught up with him and shot him again, and then killed himself. And then the guy who tried to get into the hospital, he was locked out, he died the next day. So the attacker had shot this man and another woman. Reporters have been, we do know that the murder victim, Dominic Garcia, was a husband and a father, but apparently no relation to the woman he was with when he was shot or the man who shot and killed him. And we would like to know more, but reporters have been unable to follow up on the details because the daily bloodbath in Kansas City is taking all of their attention as other people are shot and killed and bleed to death at hospitals and parking lots and under bridges and at their homes. So it's hard to track down the details of a story like this. Because of all that. Now if you thought that was shocking, get a load of this. The owners of Bustillos Trucking out of Phoenix, Arizona, have been charged with felony recycling fraud, conspiracy, and grand theft. This is a result of a grueling 5-month investigation by the Attorney General's office out in California, along with Cal Recycle and the Arizona Department of Public Safety. Mm-hmm. That's right. This Arizona-based trucking company there, the Bustillos, owned by Miguel, they're accused of smuggling an estimated $16.1 million worth of recyclable beverage containers into the Golden State. So you know the 5 cents, the 10 cents, that little return on the can says only good in California. These guys figured out that if you could put like $1 million worth of the stuff on a truck, that it was actually worth it to just smuggle it in from other states where they didn't pay the tax initially, you see, which is why this goes down as fraud. Let's see. We have a quote from the Attorney General of California, Javier Becerra. He said in a statement, quote, "California's recycling program is one of many publicly funded programs. It's used to incentivize better treatment of our environment and communities. Those who choose to undercut these efforts to protect and improve our community will be apprehended." Unquote. So I'm sorry, is the Attorney General of California gay? I just assumed he was. I hope I haven't offended anyone. It's just an assumption. I apologize if... Anyway, this is the second major recycling fraud bust in the state of California just in the last 3 months. The last people busted were suspected of smuggling 28 tons of bottles and cans into the state of California on the 10-cent deposit scam there. All right. Meanwhile, in California, it's legal to kill an innocent child. And you can also change you can change your sex from male to female on a whim. Even have that on your driver's license. You can retroactively edit your birth certificate. But you better pay that 5-cent tax. And don't you try to get away with... what do you think this is, a Seinfeld episode with your bottles and cans? Get out of here with that. They're serious about crime in California. All right, now we go once again to the science... really? File. Where a SETI professor, Silvano Colombano, suggests that alien life may have already visited Earth. That's right. And he says that we might not have known because the aliens could look so different from what we expect that they could be right here among us and we wouldn't even know it. Because we're expecting like large bulbous heads and black shiny eyes. Thin, frail bodies. But he says, quote, this is, by the way, this is a professor of something at some university that your kid might go to. What is he a professor of? I can't see his exact. Ah, here it is. He's a professor at NASA's Ames Research Center in California. So a professor of what, maybe alien theory, maybe he's an ancient alien theorist. We've been trying to nail down exactly who those are. Here's one of them right here. He says, I simply want to point out the fact that intelligence we might find, that the intelligence, let me start over again. I simply want to point out the fact that the intelligence we might find and that might choose to find us, if it hadn't already, might not be at all produced by carbon-based organisms like us, said the professor. That's a little hard to follow. Professor, can you really say that that's a fact? He said, I want to point out this fact. And then he goes on about how aliens might not be carbon-based life forms. I don't think that qualifies as a fact, Professor. But if you believe it, I suppose it's your own personal reality. So he points out that the aliens who have visited us, they might be extremely tiny. Hadn't thought about that, right? Huh? You thought you had lice? Turns out it was super intelligent aliens visiting from outer space. What else does he say? Oh, the professor says, quote, we need to revisit even our most cherished assumptions. So that seems to be a trend amongst the mentally deranged. They assume that because they're deranged, that we normal people need to revisit even our most cherished assumptions. And but I would prefer not to, Professor. So thank you very much, and I appreciate all the efforts you put into thinking about this. But I'm going to go ahead and I'm just going to stick with my most cherished assumptions. First of them being, when I read this article, is that you're a nut job. How about that? You're a buffoon and an imbecile. You're an embarrassment to the university system and to NASA. Wait, he's not done. Silvano P. Colombano, professor at NASA's Ames Research Center, goes on to say, scientists shouldn't rule out possible signals of alien life. Thanks to their own doubtful prejudices. See, this is it. Why has SETI been sitting there measuring signals from space for whatever 25 years and we haven't found anything? It's because the scientists are prejudiced and they're not listening properly. We're probably missing all kinds of signals. It's probably a Barry Manilow album being streamed right now and we're missing it because we're not listening properly. He says if we adopt a new set of assumptions, we might find some of those phenomena might might fit specific hypotheses. And we could start some serious inquiry. But first, we need a new set of assumptions. A new set of assumptions. All right. Okay. Is there much more you can say about that? I believe that I've pretty much fleshed that one out as much as I possibly can. All right. Now, let's go to the real science file, because this is real. This is real science. Listen to this. I found this fascinating. A story about a young lady who has a Siberian husky. Now, her name is Stephanie. And, she says she owes her life to her dog. And it's not like he saved her in the Alps, you know, with a little barrel of... It's not bourbon they put in there. What is it? It's not bourbon. The barrel that the dog wears in the Alps. Sherry it usually contains, I believe. So it's not like that. When she got this dog, she received the dog from her son because he was in the Air Force and he was going overseas, so she ends up with the dog. The dog, she says, put her nose on my lower belly and sniffed so intently that I thought I spilled something on my clothes. And then the dog did a second time, and then the dog sniffed a third time, and after the third time, the dog went and hid. The dog went and hid and did not want to be around Stephanie. She felt bad. She said the dog was trying to communicate with me by freaking out and rolling up in a ball and hiding in the closet. So she made an appointment with a gynecologist, and she went and found that she had cancer. So she had uterine cancer, and the dog could smell it, right? So anyway, she goes through a full hysterectomy, chemotherapy, the whole thing through 2014. And she's declared cancer-free, but one more time the dog goes and does this. Not just one more time, two more times. Sierra would sniff and go hide. So she went back to her doctor, and the cancer had returned both times, and the dog knew it. Yeah, and then her oncologist says this is not unheard of. He says there have been other dogs of various breeds with this extraordinary skill, and their accuracy rate is 98% and applies to a number of different cancer types. He says it's almost like the dog knows something is going on and is scared. The dog didn't want to be near her. The dog could smell the cancer, and she listened to the dog. Anyway, this is from the Creation Science file. Because this is just the result of pure creation science. This is God's creation, working as it was designed. And who knows, if we could figure out how this works. I mean, the dogs could sniff out the cancer and... Anyway, it's all very interesting and like that. Okay, I think that's about it, ladies and gentlemen. I want to thank everyone for tuning in. I want to thank my friends at KGOV.com and at AmericanRightToLife.com. And, of course, my other brother, Daryl, who makes it all happen here at the Weekly Worldview Studios. Should the Lord tarry, we will return. But that will be next week. If he tarries that long, we'll be back. And until then, may the grace of God go with you. And may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.